Let's begin with the salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Okay. If I could request Brother Muhammad Taqi to recite some Quran.
Inshallah, we're going to recite Surah Inshiqaq, Ayat 1 through 15. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إذا السماء انشقت وأذنت لربها وحقت وإذا الأرض مدت وألقت ما فيها وتخلت وأذنت لربها وحقت يا أيها الإنسان إنك كادح إلى ربك كدحا فملاقيه فأما من أوتي كتابه بيمينه فسوف يحاسب حسابا يسيرا وينقلب إلى أهله مسرورا وأما من أوتي كتابه وراء ظهره فسوف يدعو ثبورا ويصلى سعيرا إنه كان في أهله مسرورا إنه ظن أن لن يحور بلى إن ربه كان به بلى إن ربه كان به بصيرا صدق الله العلي العظيم.
اللهم صل على محمد. أحسنتم جزاك الله. Okay, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we're going to begin, as we have in the previous two classes, with something in the way of inspiration and reminder. So today I wanted to select a hadith for inspiration. It's a very beautiful hadith, and it connects the role of parents with God's lordship and God's tarbiyah. So it says here, when you promise something to your children, fulfill your promise. So that itself is, you know, one of the, it's emphasized in hadith, right? That when you make promises in general, you keep the promises, especially when it comes to your children, you keep the promises to your children. One of the parenting techniques that's not accepted and not supported in Islamic sources is that of making false promises. And parents, sometimes they do that. You know, they say something and they're like, oh, we'll get to it. And then they wait until the child forgets about it. But a lot of times the child doesn't forget about it. What they do end up doing is they forget about the trust that they previously had in their parents. But that's not why I chose this hadith. It's about this point. It says, for they perceive you as being the source of their risk provision. So here, like, it's clearly, the Prophet is clearly stating, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, that the job of a parent is the agent by which God does his actions. And here one of the actions of God is raziqiyya. Like, God is the one who provides sustenance on a continuous basis. And God makes those promises and he never breaks those promises. Allah says that innahu wa razzaqul mateen, like, he is the one who is extremely providing for all of his creatures. وَمَا مِن دَابَةٍ إِلَّا عَلَى اللَّهِ رِزْقُهَا. Every single moving creature in the world, Allah promises and says that it's, I'm taking care of it. I'm the one who provides for it. So here, the Prophet is warning us that, you know, as parents, we have to make sure that we fulfill that role of agency in the correct manner. And then he goes on to say that indeed Allah does not display divine anger for any occasion the way He does in regards to the women and children, meaning the way that a husband would treat his wife and the way that parents would treat their children. So this is something which is extremely like sensitive and serious in the perspective of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Okay, with that, let's launch into our third class. So we have our timeline. We request if people can arrive a little bit earlier so we can get started a little bit earlier. Inshallah, we're getting a little bit better, but inshallah we can improve on that. And then we have our Q&A at the end. Please join us on Google Classroom, as many of you have. There are the class notes, there are the weekly homework, you get reminders, you get emails, you get a nice interface. Some of you, it's the first time that you're using Google Classroom, and I think you can see that it's a convenient tool to allow us to be able to facilitate communication between teacher, student, and all that. Okay, we have about a homework. Homework is assigned weekly. My humble request is, first of all, do the homework. It is in your benefit. I've been just really impressed and grateful to all the students who are doing the homework. They're putting the time in, really thoughtful. And I can tell that the growth is happening there, meaning I can see them reflecting and, you know, kind of planning for the future and seeing what they can change. I mean, it's really wonderful, right? And this is one of the most important things that we could be doing, right? Like in terms of working on refining our strategies towards parenting. This is our responsibility. So I'm really grateful, and mashallah, please keep it up. My request is that you use the turn in assignment feature to submit the homework. A few of you have been like posting private comments or emailing me the responses. It's just to ease my burden and to make it a little bit just streamlined from my perspective. My humble request is if you could use the turn in assignment feature. On the assignment, I have a link there. If you're not sure how to do it, it's pretty straightforward. And if you know, you do have to use a Google account that's not linked to a Google Suite, you know, and maybe if your Google account is already full, so you can't like create any new attachments, then you can create another Google account just for this class. You can create an unlimited amount of Google accounts. So I think that, or you just pay the money to upgrade your account to add more space. And the other request I have is timely submissions are highly appreciated. If you can get in the response on time, then I can, it just helps me formulate in terms of like the next class. So the date that's there, if you just prioritize it, and that's sort of an indication also of the commitment that that we have towards this subject, right? Like, you know, attending class, alhamdulillah, may Allah reward you for that, you know, and, you know, submitting the homework, watching the videos and coming to in person, all the things you guys are doing, that's awesome. There's just one more thing that will really show that like sort of extra care and effort, and your reward is with Allah for doing that in a timely manner. I understand that sometimes, you know, things come up, like one of the sisters was like, okay, my laptop went missing because my kid decided to hide it from me for a couple of days. Okay, I totally get it. Yeah, no problem. Right, these things happen. And sometimes, let's say somebody gets sick or whatever, no problem, whatever, you do what you can do. But when you can, then please do it on a timely manner. Attendance is important, punctuality, participation, and the other things. And some of the parents have arranged for childcare today. Inshallah, one of them will make an announcement towards the end about childcare coming up in the future, inshallah. Okay, so in terms of syllabus, we've talked about these topics, and this week we're going to be, inshallah, be talking about practical strategies for strengthening sukoon in the home. And I have these other topics lined up. Now, just a note here that if you look at our initial plan, it was a little bit more aggressive in terms of the number of topics that we wanted to cover. And I've deliberately slowed it down. And that's because I'm seeing that there is a thirst, and I'm just getting feedback from parents who are participating in this or students who are participating in this class. There's a thirst for this material. People are taking it seriously. They're considering everything, you know, all the different things we're talking about. And there's no rush just for the sake of trying to get through everything fast. We're trying to cover those things which are really important, really like key. And even if it takes us a couple more weeks to get through something, I think it's well worth it. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but there were some homework one excerpts that that were really, I feel were really important. If there's sisters who would like to grab chairs, there are chairs up here, first of all. If you guys want to sit up in front, there's space here. You can also grab chairs and sit there rather than sitting on the floor. It's up to you. If you're comfortable on the floor, that's totally fine. So I wanted to share a couple of, these are really interesting. So one of the students of this class said that my mom would buy toys or games she knew we really liked and kept a stash in her closet. She would give one as a reward for good things. So this is sometimes some things that we do, right? We have like an award chart, or we give small gifts or whatnot. So this student reflects and says that extrinsic motivation seems exactly in line with the tarbiyah Allah uses when he offers us an abode in heaven in return for faith and good deeds. Do this and you get this reward. Right? So he's saying, I'm taking a cue from God himself. But there must be some guidelines on how this strategy should be used, because we want children that ultimately choose to do good even when there's no apparent reward offered. And you know, we can see this, like when somebody, for example, memorizes Quran just to get the Quran prize. Right? A lot of times when they get older, you know, they won't have necessarily that passion for the Quran. Right? Or many other things like good behavior or doing well in studies, right? It becomes something which, you know, maybe temporarily, you know, we know that it can be an effective strategy and there's nothing wrong with it, and it's encouraged as a temporary strategy, as a short-term or mid-term strategy, but not as a long-term strategy. That has to become intrinsic motivation. Okay, and then one of the students says, not only would she explain to me why I should wear the hijab, but that it is beautiful to wear the hijab. They would also explain to me that hijab is beautiful. It made me want to wear it more confidently. They showed me that the beauty of prayer, they showed me the beauty of prayer, not just telling me that I should pray. Asking questions of children. One of the students says that my parents used to ask questions of their children after lectures at Islamic Center. What did I like? What did I not like? What did not make sense, etc. This is really beneficial. Right, not just attending different programs, but also discussing. And that way you get, especially after the first seven, in the second 7 years, now you start triggering those processes of, you know, rational processes. Discussing the history behind non-Muslim holidays, explaining that we didn't celebrate them, but allowing us to participate in them with our classmates as young children, it took the magic or wonder out of these different events. That was a really interesting perspective. My parents never told us lies or even white lies. Very important, right? There's a misconception I've seen among a good number of people that lies are haram, but white lies are okay. Islam says that lies are haram, whether they be big or whether they be small. Lying is always haram. So even that white lie is not okay. And children are very good at picking up this thing when they see it from their parents. And later on, it doesn't match up with them. It creates like this cognitive dissonance and it becomes a problem. Now, one of the surprising things that I'm seeing, you know, in the newer generation is a lack of, in the past, it seemed there was more of a general understanding in our society that speaking the truth is really important. Honesty is, you know, the best policy. It was kind of well accepted. But now I'm finding that bar has been lowered a lot, and probably because of like social media, and you know, just very common there to just kind of present everything in a half lie or half truth or whatever it is. So knowing that, this is a super important principle to apply, you know, for ourselves and also when talking to parents. This is very interesting. Always being there for destitute families, sending them, this is what the parents used to do, sending them for ziyara or helping them with food or education. And then this student who is participating in this class says that as a parent, I keep a box of snacks in my car to give out to homeless people if I see one at a traffic light. Very interesting. Okay, appreciation for nature. Outside was my most favorite way to spend time, looking at the clouds, the ants, the trees, and plants, paying attention to the season and changes each one brought about. The seasonal changes, it's like a whole textbook that God has given us for learning about life and the way things happen. It's truly beautiful. Like, if I'll just give you one small example. You know how we all sense this thing of like where when summer starts to end and then fall settles in, the days start getting shorter, the weather patterns change, it's if we're not actively thinking about it, it's easy for us to kind of become less happy and a little bit more, you know, pessimistic, right? Because it's kind of the fall has settled, and then in winter, then we become very dreary, right? Because it's sort of like the winter blues, which is not a good thing, right? And it's good for us to notice this happening. But what happens in winter is that there is hope, right? Even in fall, there's hope. We know that what left us is going to come back again, right? So when we're talking to children, if we're able to, you know, talk about these, let them observe these, discuss these changes in the seasons, and then you can use them to your advantage. For example, when, let's say something negative comes about, right? There's some type of misfortune or something negative happens in life, right? You can talk to your children and say, oh, you know what we talked about with the seasons, how, you know, there was a fall and there was winter, but then there was spring as well. So even when you're in fall or even when you're in winter, in the midst of winter, you still have this hope that spring is going to come. And that's the way that God does things. So Allah's system is one where there's a fall, there's a winter, where there's a winter, there's a spring, and when there's spring, there's a summer. So that gives us hope, right? It tells us that things will change. You know, good. Eventually, this will pass. This will pass. So these things, like when there's worldly difficulties that will pass, this is one of the ways of explaining them. And there's a lot more to that. That inshallah, if we get a chance, we can talk about some of those. Okay, not allowing children to not talk back, which meant we were not allowed to disagree or oppose verbally anything our parents said we should do. This student was saying this was not good, that by not being able to talk back, then it really stunted our ability to express things with our parents, and it, you know, it crushed our sense of dignity. And so they were saying this is not a good technique, and I agree with them. Non-reactive parenting, when we did something that may not have been favorable, they did not have an immediate adverse reaction. They would discuss the behavior with us at a later time, once the situation had calmed down in a logical manner, rather than in an emotional, knee-jerking way. What do you guys think? Is this good? Positive? Yeah? Any case where it would not be positive? A young child? Why? Okay. Sometimes young children need immediate feedback, right? They could be doing something, let's say, which is destructive, right? So you have to gauge the situation. And some be like, okay, I mean, sometimes they don't. Sometimes we overreact, right? We think that they need immediate feedback, but actually they don't. Like, for example, a child is throwing a tantrum. Sometimes we think that we really, you know, they really need immediate attention, right? But they do need attention in the sense of like letting them know that we're there for them, we're here to help them. But we don't necessarily have to get them to stop crying right away. Let them express, meaning that if that's what they really need to do, okay, let them get it out of their system, right? Meaning, we talked about this before, I don't want to repeat what we discussed. So that's one of them. Even sometimes when children are older, but it is a situation that needs immediate reaction because it just requires that. You know, there are times where the gravity of the situation requires taking a stance immediately on whatever it is. But those are very rare, right? And this approach is something which the student was saying was very effective when they were growing up, and they want to use it as well, which I think is great. Okay, last class we covered, in summary, 5 points. That non-Islamic principles may be useful, but they are often aimed at another goal. We need to understand our goal and use those principles that will help us to achieve that goal. Not to deny not to say that everything out there is just false, there's nothing good in it. No, there's some useful techniques, some wording that we can make use of, but we have to make sure that we look at it comprehensively. Number two, the goal should be raising an abd of Allah. Remember we showed that picture, and we talked about typically what people look at as desirable and what we are trying to aim at. Number three is raising children is a joint effort, and we talked about what happens when you have disjoint efforts. And we talked about some tips for how, let's say the spouses are not on the same page, what could they do to perhaps encourage one another to be able to be on the same page. And then we talked about from a basis of Quran and Hadith that the reason why God wants us to have families is to arrive at sukoon, tranquility and comfort, which is the opposite of stress and discomfort. When we have that, that allows us to achieve the purpose of our existence, which is the higher levels of iman. And then the key criteria for evaluating the success of a home environment, how much sukoon is there? And this was a question that throughout the week, I think especially when you got a chance to look at the homework, you were probably thinking about this, that in my home, do I have this? What can I do to increase the amount of sukoon that I have in my home? Okay, so we're going to talk about, inshallah, five strategies for strengthening the sukoon in the home. Respect between husband and wife, spending quality time with the family, leading a moderate life, having a tarbiyah approach towards TV, screens, and devices, and number five, strengthening tawheed and wilayah. Okay, we have these ahadith which are narrated from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He says that it is the right of the child on his father, if he is male, that he respects his mother. And then there's other things. But then later on in that hadith, he says the same thing, that it is the right of the child, if it's a female, that he respects her mother. So whether it be a son or a daughter, the Prophet emphasizes this as the first right, that if you want to do something for your child, then the way you do that is by, first of all, looking at the child's mother and making sure that you respect her. So there could be, let's say, a parent who is lavishing their child with gifts, they're showing them love, they're taking care of them, they're respecting, they're there for them. But let's say they are disrespectful to their mother, they are doing a great disservice to their child by taking this approach. Now, of course, it also applies, you know, when it comes to the wife with respect to her husband. And there are many traditions like this. One of them is this, where Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, Sa'idun Sa'idun, meaning like, how fortunate is the woman who respects her husband and does not trouble him. Right? So it's a mutual thing from both sides, the importance of having that mutual respect. Now, when it comes to the, so this is something that, you know, a lot of people are aware of, right? But in practical life, right, we get tested in sometimes these easy or supposedly easy, simple things, we get tested, right? Especially when, you know, our children are acting up, when things are difficult at home, right? We tend to think that, okay, my primary responsibility is with my child right now, and we sort of, we fall into a state of ghafla or heedlessness when it comes to our relationship with our spouse. So one of the main things I want to drive home in today's class, because all of the individuals here are gathered here because they are looking to gain some, you know, advice from the Quran, the Ahlul Bayt, about how to improve, you know, how to work on child raising, and whether they have children right now or in the future. So one of the key points is this, is that if you want to improve child raising and tarbiyah, then focus on your relationship with your spouse. And for those of you who don't have children yet, then this gives additional motivation, because sometimes the problems that are there in that relationship, they don't show up until the stress is put on it. It's like a bridge that's built. You know, I remember some years back in my home state of Minnesota, there was one of the highways, I think it was Highway 694 or 94, right? The bridge actually collapsed, right? Like, it was like the highway thing, the car is driving on it, and then it just collapsed down. Now, you know, we just drive on those, we don't think we do that all the time. We don't even realize we're going on a ramp here that could potentially even collapse. It doesn't even come into our mind. But when you put enough pressure on something, then that's when some of those faults, those fissures, they show themselves, and then it can lead to an entire collapse. So sometimes there can be a husband and wife, because they haven't been tried the way that they get tried when they have children, everything is smooth sailing, you know, reasonably speaking, post-honeymoon, everything good, and then child comes into the picture, and it's like, what happened, right? What happened to all those, you know, good feelings and all those, you know, good relationship, everything that, we're snapping at each other, we're getting on, you know, and sometimes husband and wife, or wife, or both, you know, they come and they say that, okay, well, you know, we realize that we have this type of relationship now. And they even mentioned the words like toxic and whatnot. So just the things that we have to realize, you know, that, you know, this is where some of our challenges lie. Like, we have general advice about how we should approach conflict. How should we approach people who we find troublesome, quarrelsome? وَعِبَادُ الرَّحْمَنِ الَّذِينَ يَمْشُونَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ هَوْنًا وَإِذَا خَاطَبَهُمَ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا. What is the motto of the servants of the Rahman? Like their model, like the what characterizes their approach, their speech, right, their conduct, especially with believers, is salam, right? Not just saying salam, but salam as a whole. You know, I'm not at war with you. I'm not at war with you, right? Let's try to figure out how to achieve peace. Now, one of the areas which I'm gonna be a little bit brave here and maybe address an issue which some people they don't like to be told these things, right? And they're like, why are you talking about these things, right? But again, we're trying to do our responsibility, we're trying to figure out where are the biggest pain points, where does it start from? So respect, of course, is verbal. Respect, of course, is in conduct. Respect comes in the form of forgiveness and tolerance. Okay, not to the extreme. Of course, there are times where, you know, we need to bring up flaws. We need to talk about things and have serious discussions. We need to express what's really going on and tell our spouses about some of the challenges that we're facing. That's of course, and you know, everything in its own place. But there's also another area of respect which we can't ignore, which is super important, which is respect when it comes to our physical interaction with our spouses. And what I'm talking about here is, you know, for this purpose, I'm just talking about appearance, right? And of course, everything that goes along with that, right? Just some hadith about this. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that when it comes to the responsibilities of the wife, she should wear the best of her perfume, wear the best of her clothes, adorn herself in the best of manner for her husband. Okay, it is not appropriate for the wife to not take care of herself. Even if it means donning a necklace, she should adorn herself, even if she has become elderly. Imam Bakr alayhi salam. The women of Bani Israel violated their chastity and God-wariness for no reason other than their husbands did not adorn themselves for them. A wife has the same expectation of her husband he has of her. So this is not one-sided, this is both parties. Okay, the husband has a responsibility to make himself up and to like look good and adorn himself, according to this hadith, for his wife. And a wife has a responsibility for husband as well. I remember some time back, a husband was telling me about, you know, we were just talking about, we had done some presentation about something not directly about marriage, and he came up to me and said that, you know, at home, we're talking about clothing or israf or moderation. So he said, at home, you know, I try to be simple, right? But I know that at work I have to, you know, meet a certain standard. So he said, at home I tend to wear like the, you know, the most like kind of oldest clothes I have. You know, if I have ripped jeans or I have that thing, I dress up like that, right? And, you know, I was trying to say, I was like, okay, I admire your spirit of wanting to live a simple life, right? But, I mean, you know, you're out there with your Rolex and your suit and Armani suit and whatever, when you're going and doing your thing, right? And at home, you're looking like I don't know what, right? I mean, what about your responsibility to your spouse? Right? That's important, right? It's a way of showing that you care, right? When you take care of your appearance. Now, notice that Imam Bakr al-Islam, he says that even if she has become elderly, right? And we could probably add there, even if she has given birth to a child. Maybe not right away, of course, right? I mean, everything's reasonable expectations, right? But, you know, when things are okay in a state, then, okay, even if it's like, even if things are more difficult, these things matter, right? These things do matter in terms of, you know, just creating this sort of a nonverbal communication part of showing respect between spouses. And sometimes, spouses will come and they'll say that, you know, this thing really bothers us, right? And it's troubling us in many other ways because it has ramifications when it comes to other matters. And you can kind of see that being referred to here in this hadith here, that there's other things that can be triggered when this is not in place. Okay? So just in summary, when it comes to respect among spouses, as we saw, special respect is due to one's spouse on account of the child. There's one time where, you know, okay, I'm getting married, this is an amana of Allah, right? Allah has put this person in my life as a trust, and that's something which I have to respect. And now that I have a child, okay, now because that child's mother or father is this person, I have a special respect that's due to them. Now, we're talking about those things that create sukoon, right? Now imagine at home, there's constant bickering, arguing, unhappiness, threats, crying, stubbornness, and stress. Okay, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, in the households of some of the believers, right, they constantly face these things in one way or the other. Right? How can we have an environment of sukoon and tranquility if those are in place? It's going to be very difficult. So, and a lot of this, it goes back to a very simple thing that, okay, we need to establish an atmosphere of respect. We may disagree on things, but there's a way to disagree. So disagreements are normal. It happens. That's life. That's the way God made us. But how do we handle those disagreements? Right? The last thing we want to do is bring them out in the open in front of our children. That's the last thing. They're very quick at picking up. They might not say anything, but it is affecting them. And remember, the home has to be the place where they feel the most comfortable in sharing their emotions and feeling like they're going to be emotionally taken care of. Right? Imagine, why is it that when you go to a hospital, why is it that silence is really important, right? Because part of the healing process is making sure that you're not troubled by all these like different sights and sounds, right? You want to keep it quiet, right? You try to, you know, find, you know, the best hospitals are those where they put them in a nice, like, beautiful area. The patients can look outdoors because it's part of the healing process. Our homes need to be places of healing, of spiritual healing. You know, this is very important. Now, there are severe cases that sometimes people have when it comes to like disagreements between the husband and wife. And it's like they're really like extreme, right? So sometimes they might look at these and say, okay, how can you be telling me about, you know, these type of things? And our problems are so difficult, right? Now, even in these cases, I just want to say that it's really important as believers that we have to have hope, right? Like people, like the hearts are in the hands of God. Like we talked about this hadith of two fingers of God. God is the one who can flip somebody's heart. We have to have hope. And when we have hope, then that itself will be a great source of energy for the person we're talking to. Having a lot of patience. Now, patience, I put a star there because patience, Islamic patience, is not just like sitting there and not saying anything. Patience is about active patience, that I'm restrained, I'm in control. I'm also working at strategies to figure out how I can help the situation. I also want to mention here the importance of counseling. Counseling should not be seen as like something which is like, okay, I'm a bad person if I go to a counselor. We have to go to the right counselor, of course, somebody who is committed to religious principles. Otherwise, you know, if you go to a typical counselor, they'll be like, okay, just leave, right? Whatever, your life is better when you're alone. No, we're going to go to Islamic counselors who have the Islamic principles, who have studied them, they're in touch with the scholars, right? But counseling can really help at times. So just have a third-person perspective. And Maulana Abadi, you know, he tells us a story of some of the great scholars who would sometimes have counselors come home and they would just say that, look, I want you to talk to both of us and just make sure that I'm not doing injustice to my wife, right? It would actually call the counselor home, right? And these are great, some of the great scholars. Children should not be worried about what will happen. Like, you know how when there's tension and stress, right? Then it's like, oh, there's threats being made, like, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. Children should not ever have to think that, okay, this environment that I have here of tranquility, that somehow it could be disturbed because of the relationship of the parents. And respect is shown at different levels, including a physical appearance. Now, let's say I have a problem with my spouse when it comes to this thing. What is my strategy? Should I take the hadith and be like, okay, on our Tuesday parenting class, we read this hadith, here you go, right? You know, Imam Rida, Imam Baqir, Aslam. Right? If you think that's the most effective, then go ahead and do it. But probably you want a more, you know, political and well thought out strategy, right? Where first of all, of course, we look at ourselves and say, well, what can we do, right? Sometimes even that hadith, it said even putting on a necklace, right? So sometimes it can be something small, a small gesture, but it makes a difference. It shows that I care, right? We take our steps, right, and then slowly we start posing the positive approach, like, oh, you know, I really appreciate that you did that, right? These type of subtle messages can be much more effective than going, you know, full force with, and you know, guns pointed, that type of thing. Okay, the last thing I want to say about respect is I came across this hadith which I thought would be very useful, that, you know, one of the main reasons for the lack of respect in the home is uncontrolled anger. And it comes out all the time, right? Because parents are pushed, you know, because of various things. So Imam Ali Islam says that, he says that, be the owner of your soul's passion, the sharpness of your rage, the attack of your hand, and the sharpness of your tongue. So he knows human beings. He knows that there's something inside of us which will, you know, have like this wave of, the word is hamiya, will come up. And then our ghadab will come into our rage, and then our hand will want to do something, our tongue. Prevent yourself from all of these by delaying your response until your rage has calmed and Allah has returned your intellect. So this is one of the key practical strategies, is that when somebody's angry, that's not the time to take action. That's not the time to reform or to point out things. Just swallow the anger, wait, calm. You know, we're told in hadith that go and change your position. Do, like, if you're standing, you sit, go put some water on your face, go do wudu. If it's a family member, go and, you know, lovingly touch them to kind of calm things down. And, you know, this, in hadith we're told that that brings about sukoon. When you touch somebody, it brings about like a type of like a comfort for the person whose, you know, kind of emotions are high at that time. Okay, so we've talked about, if we go back to the, we said that we want to talk about these five strategies, and we went through the first one, which is respect. Now, there's four more. This is spending quality time with the family where everyone feels understood and appreciated. And I'm just going, by the way, if you guys have questions, then you can ask them at the end. But if there's something, again, that's you think is really key to ask in the midst, then please do so. So we have these beautiful hadith from the Prophet of Allah. Indeed, Allah loves the believer and he loves his family and children. Okay, that itself is super important, right? Like, sometimes, you know, we're in a world where we tend to be love-starved, and we need to know that we're loved. And this is something that's super important to remember, that if somebody has iman in their hearts, that doesn't come from nowhere. Iman comes from Allah. Allah wouldn't put that iman in somebody's heart unless he loves them. So that's number one. Then he says, the most beloved thing to Allah, the Exalted, is to see a man with his wife and children on a table spread eating. When they gather together, Allah looks with mercy towards them and he forgives them before they get up from their places. Similarly, the companion says, O Messenger of Allah, is sitting with one's family better or sitting in the masjid? He said, sitting for an hour with one's family is more beloved to me than performing itikaf in this masjid of mine. I've mentioned this before, so my apologies if this is repeated, but some of you, I think, will find it interesting. They did studies on this, right? Because they knew that there's something therapeutic about actually having family meals together. So one of the most comprehensive studies, they looked at 26,000 adolescents, which is a lot of kids in Canada. And they said that, okay, depending on how many meals, family dinners you have a week, what's your situation? Like, are you satisfied with life? Right? Do you have pro-social behavior? Or are you like somebody who's, you know, can you be cheerful, laugh at things, jokes, sort of things? Do you have positive well-being? Okay, do you have externalizing problems? Meaning problems like, let's say that you get into fights, you name-calling, you know, getting into detention, suspension, these type of things, drugs. Internalized problems, meaning that do you have like suicidal thoughts, depression, anxiety, etc. So interestingly, they said that when you have zero meals, family dinners per week, high rate of internalizing problems, high rate of externalizing problems, and very negative amount of well-being, very negative amount of pro-social behavior and life satisfaction. And then you go one meal, it like halves, the problem, right? And then you go another meal, it's a third of the problem. Another meal, a fourth of the problem. And then you get to four or five meals. I don't know what happens over here with it's flipping. It's actually going well here, right? So now you have it reversed, that what's positive is like well-being, pro-social behavior, life satisfaction. That's seven meals a week, okay? Now, everything has, remember we said that everything has exceptions, right? Let's say that, okay, we are having our family meal, but, you know, in the family meal, right, like let's say one of the parents is constantly picking on the children, right? They're always like, let's say, you know, pointing out that this is what's wrong with you. They're telling them off. And so here we have a deeper problem, right? Like, which is that, you know, the parent hasn't figured out this thing of like the importance of respecting and loving the child. So if the meal is going to be a place where the child is shamed, right, better not to have that meal then. Right? I mean, that's not what we want to achieve by this meal. The idea is that this is a time for healing to take place. Okay, situation number two. Let's say that in the mealtime, siblings are, you know, doing things to one another, right? Which is very common, right? It's very, like, it's part of, maybe if, you know, if your kids are very young right now, you haven't encountered it, but like when they get a little bit older, it's part of life, right? Now, one way of looking at it is like, no, it gets too chaotic, like they're, you know, there's too much that goes on. They call each other names or they get upset. Okay, that's one way. So it's more peaceful if we eat at different times and everyone has their own plate. They go and do their own thing. Another way of looking at it is that what better occasion to be able to observe like the interpersonal conflicts that our siblings have and then to be able to slowly, gently, gradually work on improving that, right? Because here they are right in front of you. They're acting out, right? So it's good. Alhamdulillah. I know this about this child and that child. These are some of the things. And, you know, again, that as that one of the students had pointed out, that not having a knee-jerk reaction, the delayed reaction, but really thinking strategically. I know that this is an issue, so how can I address it? All right, any comments about this particular thing from anybody here before we go on? I just want to see if anybody has anything to say. Yes. Yeah, that's a good question. So the question is that, is there any correlation between this and the socioeconomic status of the family? Because you could say that, okay, well, those same families that have 7 family dinners together, they tend to be in the higher bracket, and then they have less problems because of other factors. So the authors of this research paper, they did say that you know, there, this is a possibility of biasing the study here, and we can't say that this is the only cause, but the beauty of what we have is, you know, we have these principles that are there, you know, in the hadith as well about the importance of spending time together as a family. And we have other hadith about that. I should have included the hadith here that Allah does not count the time that we spend over like a table spread as a family. Allah does not count that against our overall kind of allotment of time that He's given us to live in this world. So it's like, let's say we take an extra 15 minutes, we're not going to get like lose that 15 minutes when it comes to our overall life, which is pretty cool, right? Because sometimes we're having fun, we're discussing things and telling stories, whatever, then you know, that's something which is good. Okay, yes?
Something I find common with...
Can you use the microphone? No, but for the people who are online. Like
something they... I find common with this is there's... All of a sudden, this need to respond to a situation, you know, when you observe something as a parent or, you know, like, let's say with your spouse, you know, there's this like, you know, fear that, oh, they said something wrong or they did something wrong. And if I don't address this now, they might think that, you know, it's okay. And even as an educator, I feel like that happens sometimes where like, you know, a student, you know, makes like a disrespectful comment or they do something out of, you know, the ordinary, and then, you know, something tells you, well, if you don't do something about this now, the rest of the kids are going to think that this guy got away with it. And I don't know, is that right? Is it wrong? It's very kind of a question for me. Like, I know it's maybe case by case, but sometimes you're like, you know, and then I think that, like you said, like, let's say at a family dinner, you find out that your son's been listening, let's say, to like this music that he's not supposed to. So you're kind of like just pulling your hair out thinking, gosh, where did this come from? And I thought I was... And then you're like, well, if I don't say anything about this situation now, he's going to think that it's okay, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I think, in a way, you answered your question, right? That, like, there are some circumstances where it's very important to say something. Otherwise, like, let's say this, it might be that there's, like, this, the impression is given that we're tolerant of sinfulness or, you know, evil principles or practices. But a lot of times that can be achieved, but after the emotions have calmed down and in a strategic manner where you're still sending the message in a right way. And especially when you have these examples, like let's say you have a classroom, well, you're going to have that same group of students tomorrow and the next day and the next day, right? So the opportunity will arise to address it, right? And same thing with the family as well, right? Okay, so you found out about that thing, right? Now, remember, we don't want to do something that will make our children feel that they can't come to us and admit what the issues are, that if they think that, okay, if I admit to my parents I've done something wrong, they will like disown me or they will shame me, then they're not going to come to us when they really need us. And so this needs to be dealt with in a very like careful manner where, yes, we convey that point that listening to this music is haram, but we don't at all break that connection that we have, right? In a very loving, gentle way, we talk about it. And then maybe put in a couple of stern reminders, but at the right time, in a way that's not gonna like push them away from us completely. Okay. Yes.
Sorry, just
for the people online. And could I just get one
testing.
Of can somebody monitor the YouTube? Muhammad Taqi was doing it, but he stepped out. So can somebody just monitor the YouTube thing to see if there's any... Who's going to do it? You're going to do it? Okay. Yes, sister.
So my question was, like, if someone has parents who are a lot older than them, and sometimes I feel like because they are coming from, like, a generation and a time and, like, a certain culture, and the kids are growing up a certain way, like, in a different country. Like, for example, they were born here, and their parents tell them to not do this, and then sometimes they have, like, these disagreements that come up later on, or even when they're like teenagers, because a lot of teenagers give their parents like a hard time. So like, in that situation, what do the parents do in that case? Because they are older, and at the same time, they have a lot of wisdom, of course, you know, in telling their kids, no, you shouldn't do that. But what is something that they can do to keep their calmness and that sukoon in their house? So that's my question.
I mean, on this point, like, this is actually, it's a good point. Thank you for bringing it up. That when you do have the situation of, like, the parents are immigrants, right, and the children are being brought up in a society which is, they don't have too much awareness of the ins and outs of the society. It is super important to for the parents to really, like, acknowledge the ignorance that they have, right? This is one of the things that, like, you know, Islam calls us to, like, be aware that, okay, these are the areas where I need to, like, gain knowledge, right? And go about learning those things. And this is very important for them to realize, okay, so how is it that things work here, right? And that can happen a lot through having a good channel of communication open up with their children. So they're asking them, okay, how are things going? What are the different things going on in your life? Why is this, what's happening here? Those parents should also be involved. Like, for example, when they get a chance to go to the school to see, you know, maybe be like chaperones for field trips, they need to talk to the teachers and become kind of immersed in this part of their student life, so their child's life, so they understand, they start to see what are the challenges that the child is facing. The same parents also need to be in communication with other parents who have children around the same age, so they can learn from them. Like, we learn a lot when we talk to our peers, and they benefit from us, and we benefit from them. It's a mutual sort of thing. And also, like, just in general, like, I think it's important for parents in such a situation, because they know that they're elderly and, you know, it might be more difficult for them to, let's say, deal with whatever's happening. They're not as sort of, it's harder for them to, like, you know, be adept and, like, sort of taking new ideas. It's very important for them to practice, like, actively practice sabr, right? Actively, like, because it's otherwise their nature might be one to, like, really kind of say things in a very sharp way or harsh way and really kind of write off any other ideas because they're sort of set, they think this is the right way of doing things. They need to have patience. They need to be able to see things from a different perspective, not act react in an emotional way. Okay, let's go on. Brother Matthew, let me know if there's anything online. So the next topic is leading a moderate life. So I want to, you know, the point here is really basic, but it's profound in terms of its impact on affecting the overall sukoon in a home. It's this idea that when the members of the home, they don't have contentment with their material situation, it just leads to a lot of, like, kind of stress and a disrupted environment. And just a reminder, we have these ahadith, for example, from our Prophet. He says that al-qana'a, contentment, is a treasure trove that never runs out. Okay, unlike worldly treasure, bank accounts, big, you know, six-figure salaries, whatever, that does not give contentment. Okay, I'm sorry, that's a treasure trove that never runs out, maybe in terms of financial numbers, but it doesn't bring contentment. Money itself does not bring contentment. We have a hadith from our Prophet. He says, do not stare longingly at what is in the hands of people. Whoever does that, his grief will be prolonged. His rage will not subside, and he will think little of Allah's blessings upon him. Now, this is really key, because one of the things that makes us not content is when we compare our situation with other people, right? And this happens; it's part of the culture now, especially through social media. It's been sort of enhanced, this idea of, like, now we see people's private lives. Sometimes, for example, people will go on vacation and they'll post, like, well, we did this, we did that, right? They'll post about their new possession, their new cars, whatever it is. They discuss things like that. It happens even, you know, with babies. Like, it's like in the stroller, right? The baby strollers, right? Now, nothing wrong with having a good baby stroller, right? But sometimes you got to wonder, right? Okay, so was that $700 model really needed for yours more than, like, let's say the $300 model? I mean, $300, okay, alhamdulillah, right? But, and some of it's needed. Oh, no, it is needed. I'm not saying that. But we need to ask ourselves, okay, what is a need and what is a want? And what I want to say here is this thing of comparison, right? Comparison is something which is severely condemned in the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. And when we talk to individuals, and it seems to be a problem across both genders, but in particular, like, it seems that among teenage girls, and sometimes it stays with them even past that, it's a huge issue. This idea of always comparing, like, what about the other people? What do they have? You know, I'm measuring my value based on what other people have and what I don't have, as opposed to looking at what I do have. So Islam, you know, tells us that, okay, poverty is not something desirable, right? You go ahead and, you know, work, earn, so they're not poor. But in the modern world, there's this modern poverty in which it's a hole that you keep, the more you make, you get deeper and deeper into that hole. Because there's always this need that's created. You think that once you get, you don't have, you know, you're just not satisfied. You're always like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? So this is something that requires, like, some, you know, self-examination, that, you know, what is it that's happening here when it comes to me, my home, right? Do we feel like content with our material possessions, or are we always thinking that what's the next thing I have to do, the next thing I have to do? We also have to acknowledge the influence of the Joneses. You know, this idea that you having to keep up with the neighbor, the Joneses. This is a concept in American culture. But today's world, it's something which, again, it's like a lot of times it's spread to social media. Now, some of the things that, like, practical examples of this is living in bad debt. You know, there's some type of debt which they say is good debt. It's just the way the system works, and, you know, it enhances your financial position. As long as somebody goes about it in a halal way, they say it's a good thing. But there's bad debt. For example, credit card debts, right? Why is it that, let's say, there's some families who constantly are overspending, right? What is it that's there? You know, what is the root cause of it? Another example of this is unnecessarily having long working hours, right? It's amazing. You talk to people and they're like, you know, I was going through this phase and I realized that because of my work schedule, my family life was, you know, kind of falling apart. And I just started looking for another job, and I found another job, right? It was like, it was there. Like, it was like, it was waiting for me. I just needed to, like, sort of take those steps, and then I found this other opportunity, right? So we have to remember, sometimes, like, we create these type of ruts for ourselves, right? We're not stepping back and looking, well, what's happening here? We think that this is the only way to success. Is it really? Is it something which is, you know, absolutely necessary? Sacrificing children for a career, right? You see that people are trying to make these choices, and they're like, oh, do I do this or do I not? When do I go back to school? When do I go into the job market? What's going to happen? Right? Again, what are we going to be asked about when we go into our graves? Right? What is it? Is it the number of degrees that we got? Right? Did we get that extra promotion? Right? What is it that is going to be that thawab jari for us? Okay, another litmus test is, do I feel incomplete and unfulfilled because of my material situation? Right? Do I feel, is it something where I feel inside of me that, you know, I wake up in the morning, I'm like feeling not happy because of it? Or am I in a sense, no, alhamdulillah, I'm very, very grateful for what I have. Gratefulness itself, do I experience that gratefulness on a daily basis for what God has given me? Right? And it's a simple question. And if we don't have that, then it's a sign that, okay, we can work on this in order to achieve more sukoon in our homes. Okay, the other two topics that I had were about devices and about spirituality. But I think that given the timing, we are at 8:02. I want to pause here and just see if we have any questions, either online, about anything that we talked about today, online or in person here. So let me see online, is there anything? Not yet, okay. All right, what about in person? Do we have any comments? Yes.
So I wanted to ask, so when we talked about the situation where basically you mentioned, you know, the hadith from Imam Ali talking about like holding, let's say like the anger or, you know, passion, if you will. So, or in some of the solutions you provided were, you know, walking away from the situation, washing your face and, you know, whatnot. But how do you deal in a situation where, let's say the personality you're dealing with, you know, they are the type of person they want to like resolve the situation right there and right then. And, you know, not that they want to instigate things or anything like that, but let's say, you know, you've now been triggered and you have that rage, you know, and you're fighting to try to keep the rage controlled. But at the same time, let's say you're walking away and you're trying to do those, you know, solutions that, or, you know, methods that you mentioned, but the person continues to persist. They don't give you that kind of space or that kind of room to breathe, if you will. What are like, how do you deal in that kind of situation with, you know, let's say personalities like that?
Yeah. It's interesting. Like there's some personalities where they want to resolve it instantly. And they also want the other party to share everything that's going on, like in their mind and all their thoughts. And they're not going to be happy unless they get everything out. Right. And I've seen that sometimes that's super damaging, right? Because at that time, when you don't have control, then you might say all these things that, you know, the other party is like, oh my God, I wish I didn't hear that, right? So it's a really good question. In these situations, first of all, it's important to recognize, why is it that that person wants me to resolve it right now, right? What is it? Why do they have, is it a sense of like insecurity? Maybe I'm not doing a good enough job of like letting them know that, you know, I'm there for them. Like really like letting them know that, like, whether I'm, you know, I need my own time, my own space or not, whatever, but it's good times or times where our relationship is put under stress, I am there for you. And really making sure that the level of trust and confidence is there in one another. One of the keys to success in a marriage is being able to rely on one another and to trust one another. So that trust, building that trust, maybe some work needs to go on in building that trust a little bit more. The second thing is that person might have some insecurity because of past experiences with like other family members and whatnot. And maybe they feel that, okay, if we don't take care of it right now, then it's gonna like, let's say, spiral and whatever. So again, like, you know, seeing if, let's say that they have some type, maybe they need to talk those out with somebody who can help them, you know, and resolve those. Because if these are unresolved sort of emotional baggage from the past, then it might show up in other ways in the relationship as well. So encouraging them to like deal with those. Another point is to really make sure that, you know, at the right time, we let them know that, you know, God has made people in different ways. There are those people who, we talked about this before, they everything is out in the open. There's nothing that needs to be like solved like in you know, internally, and they can just be talking and whatever, everything's fine. But the other people who know, they need that time to themselves. It's very important. They can't always be, they need time to process their emotions, their thoughts. So letting them know that, like, this is the way that God made me. It's, you know, whether it's you or anybody else, there are times when I'm going to need some time to myself. It's not, don't think that's something which is, don't read into it as something, you know, that I'm trying to send you a message or anything like that. And also, you know, when we're talking about these things of like the different methods of like walking away or doing wudu, right? The point is what? That you, like these ahadith, they're encouraging us that do something to regain control of the situation, right? Because let's say you're walking to do wudu, right? You're in charge again, right? But if you start talking, you're not in charge. Your aql isn't in charge. Your ghadab is in charge. Your rage is in charge. So do something to regain that. Okay, now, while you're doing that, right? Like there's one time where somebody says, okay, I can't talk right now. I need to leave. There's another time where you lovingly say that, or gently say that, like, you know, just give me a couple minutes, right? I just need to take care of something, or just be like, you know, I want to have this conversation with you. I just need a few minutes just to like process what's going on. I'll get back to you, and you say it with a smile or something like that, right? And then you go do that thing. So there's a technique that can be used to like assure the other person that you're not ignoring them or pushing them away, but you just need, you know, sometimes. This is some of the things that come to mind. sir, if you don't mind, if you could just use the microphone.
Assalamu alaikum. Just to add on to that, I think one of the reasons I kind of had the same point. I think that one of the reasons when people walk away is sometimes it's used as a weapon of like silent treatment. Mm-hmm. Like some people like use it as a technique to say, actually, instead of responding to you and going back and forth, this is my comeback. Like, yeah. I'm going to walk away.
Yeah.
And I think it can also be like really detrimental in teaching children, mm-hmm. that, oh, when there's a conflict, what do? We just walk away.
Yeah.
And so I think like what you said is the intention behind it is important. And because the spouses might not have an understanding as to why that walk away is happening.
Yeah.
And I think that intention needs to be made clear out loud that, mm-hmm. I still love you and I, mm-hmm. really want to work this out.
Mm-hmm.
But I just need to take a little walk for myself.
Yeah.
And unless that is said, mm-hmm. that can be seen as a retaliation.
Yeah. I mean, thank you so much, Sima. So, you know, if we take that other hadith which says that you go and you make like physical contact. So imagine somebody going and like just say, putting a hand on their shoulder, say like, okay, let's, you know, we're going to work through this. We're going to get through this, right? Let's talk about it, you know, like after dinner or something like that, right? So you let them know, you put them at ease that way. And then you kind of delay this until the nerves have settled. So thank you. Okay. I think we have like 2 minutes. So
we're talking about this topic of anger. I wanted to know, like, if within your household, whether it's, you know, the parents or the extended family, and if the answer is different, then would like to know what the difference would be. If there is a conversation, angry conversation that occurs, the children will definitely get scared. They might go to a corner, they might go to the mom, they might go to the dad, they might go anywhere. What do you do afterwards? So things calm down, do you just let it go, not talk about it, and just act like everything is normal? Or do you go to your child and you explain to them, you know, everything's all right? Or like, do you give an explanation about like kind of that incident and what happened?
Yeah. So, again, we're going to notice that, you know, children react differently to situations. Some of them do get scared, right? But some of them, it doesn't bother them that much, right? At least from the outward level. For those, you know, of course, and if it's repeated, it's going to affect their overall impression of the home environment. They're going to start to lose trust in it. And we talked about how that's something which isn't good. But there are certain children who are like, they're very sensitive to these type of things. They do get scared. They'll cry, whatever like that. They need to be comforted. They need to be like sort of treated. Sometimes that can be done through nonverbal techniques, you know, and just really like going and, you know, kind of saying it's okay, that type of thing, giving them a hug, whatever, giving them special love, you know, and that way you're sort of conveying things, but without necessarily, because if you talk about it, sometimes it can become very difficult. Well, why is, you know, they need to explain why this and why that. And we don't have a why sometimes. We can't explain other people's behavior because it's so irrational. But there will come a time where, you know, words will need to be used, and, you know, if it's repeated especially, right, and they'll have to know how to teach them how to cope with this in a way that they don't get scared. You're not, you know, there's nothing wrong with you, right? You're don't think that this is about you. Sometimes people, you know, they get upset about things because of whatever, right, and then they raise their voice and they do these things. But what we need to do is try to remain calm and just kind of maybe move away and do our thing and pray for them or something. And inshallah, things will get better. Just really like explaining things in a very simple way. But the point is for them to like realize, okay, they're not bad. It's not that they're doing something. And also teaching them how to cope with this. At the end of the day, like in life, like we will come across these people, and we do want to teach, you know, our children at some point how to deal with that. Okay. I think that we are done now. Thank you so much, everyone, for your participation and the great questions and comments. I just wanted to say that, you know, we all are aware of the school shooting that took place earlier today. It was a tragic thing, which, you know, I think the most tragic one in many years, right? And just comes after the thing that happened in Buffalo a couple of weeks ago, right? This is something which is very, like, you know, troublesome, right? That these type of things should happen. And apparently this guy also traveled to a place outside of his city. He went to an elementary school. You know, that means that children were killed as part of this, right? Like, it's very shocking. And we pray that Allah gives, you know, patience and an ability to cope with this to the families who are affected and to the whole community, which is So what's the best, what's the next step for the parents who want to contribute towards that? Okay. Okay. So. Okay. Okay. Thank you so much, Sister Reem. So basically, you'll get an email. There'll be a form if you're interested. You know, all the details will be there about how much, you know, in terms of will be needed for that. If you're interested, you can sign up for it. Depending on the response, then it will or will not be arranged. Okay, alhamdulillah, let's recite salawat.
Do you want to ask an online question?
No, we're done now. I mean, the timing's up.
Online question or not?